Hello everyone, my name is Adam. I'm developing a site called GFAM, and I've got Andrew here, who is the CEO of Coinos. How are you, Andrew?
I'm doing good.
Did you see the news yesterday that Cardano has now hard forked and has multi-asset capabilities now? Is that something that Coinos might be able to do in the future?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. Yeah, I'm super excited about this, actually. I had no idea it was happening. So I've been kind of frantically researching this, looking into it. It also helped me realize kind of maybe what we're trying to do here in conversations like this. like, why should anybody listen to my opinion on what Cardano is doing or what Polkadot is doing, especially when I'm obviously going to be biased because we're building a competitor to these blockchains. And then I also thought about how I've always been really surprised that more speculators never reach out to me and just say, hey, you know, what do you think about their tech? Yeah, and I actually mentioned this to a trader recently, and I was like, why don't you guys ever, we were having a private conversation, and I was like, why don't you guys ever ask us about our analysis of other blockchains? And he goes, oh, I didn't realize you guys like offered that, which I thought was a really weird way of putting it.
I didn't realize you guys had opinions, or looked at anything.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, yeah, well, we look at what everybody's doing, and if they're building anything that we can use, we'd use that. You know, we don't build all of our software ourselves, and you know, so then this news about Cardano adding native token support came out. I was trying to read up on all of it. What does it mean? Why is it important? How will users or developers be able to take advantage of this feature? And I was actually having a lot of difficulty really gaining a deep understanding of what it actually meant as an expert in the field, as somebody who knows technically what it all means. So I was still like, struggling.
I noticed like in the reporting that they spoke a lot about like the node operators, like the node operators don't need to worry. It'll all just happen seamlessly, but there was nothing about developers. There was nothing like, whoa, now you can do this. So I don't really know what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I was like, okay. But then I had the wild idea. Well, how does it compare to how we're going to do things with Coinos?
Of course. Yeah.
and once I started looking at it that way, I was actually able to gain a deeper understanding. It's weird. It seems so obviously. Obviously, I know how we're doing things on Coinos. I know that they're different. But it wasn't until I drew that contrast. And the important point I'm trying to make here is that for anybody who's watching this, I think the value that you can get from this is, yes, of course, understand that I'm biased. But that doesn't mean that I can't help give you some insights into the potential value in these protocols, the benefits and the upsides, the downsides, understanding that I'm biased. Everybody's biased. Yeah. They're biased.
Yeah. People who buy a coin are biased.
Like and most of what you're hearing is going to be from the developers of the protocol and the holders of that token. And so it's hugely skewed.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I'm realizing about Cardano personally is that I think that they're shaping up to be our worthy adversary. You know, like, I think that's one of the things that we've been missing as a team in the space is who's our worthy adversary. When we look at most of the other projects out there, honestly, I hate them. Like, they're awful. I don't even, like, people are like, who's your competitor? Stuff like that. And I'm just like, oh, I can't even think about those protocols. They're so bad.
Yeah.
But Cardano is really like, they agree with us on the problems. It's on our solutions that are different. And so the way I've been thinking about Cardano now is that it's almost this funhouse mirror version of Coinos, or we're the funhouse mirror version of them. And so to kind of get back to the question of these native assets, what's interesting about this particular example is that we agree on the problem. We take literally the exact opposite approach.
Ah, because you're using smart contracts and they're putting it on chain.
Exactly. So it's like everybody agrees. Now, this might get a little technical, but I'll just dip into the technical and then immediately burn past it. Everybody agrees that it was a mistake to have Ether and have ERC-20s. Now, the way we always looked at it and was Ether should have always been an ERC-20.
Right.
So what Cardano's done is said, well, you know, the native token should be the same as all of the other tokens, make them all native tokens, hard fork this capability into the blockchain. What we're saying is, no, everything should be a smart contract. Coin will be a token just like any other token. Now, why are these different? Why do these different approaches matter? Well, I think the key question is that people should ask is, why were these different approaches taken? And the more I learn about Coinos, the more I come to the conclusion that their why is the DAO hack.
Is the what?
Yeah, this is crazy. This is gonna, so here's the thing. Here's the thing. I'm gonna get a little Freudian for a second. The way to understand every blockchain project is to find their trauma.
Right.
Every blockchain I've seen now is a response to a trauma.
I like that.
And we're no different. Yeah, we're no different. I'll get to our trauma.
Yeah.
Their trauma, and you'll see it, it's in the announcement about native assets that they released. They didn't name it, but they said they referred to $300 million hack of Ethereum.
Oh.
That is the DAO hack.
Right.
And that is the traumatic event that explains all of Cardano.
Right.
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
At the time. And everybody thought this could tank blockchain because Ethereum was the big hope of blockchain.
Yeah.
And the DAO was the most spectacular example of the potential. And then it got hacked. And oh my God, this is a big, this could ruin everything. And so Charlie Hoskinson sets off and decides he's going to build a blockchain with Haskell.
Right.
All for the security.
Right.
We can prevent hacks if we just build this blockchain in Haskell. And 5 years later, we have Cardano. And now we know that what people really want to do on blockchains is issue more tokens.
Yeah.
So I built this blockchain in Haskell. People want to use these blockchains to issue tokens, and they don't want to pay fees. So what do I have to do? I have to hard fork in to my blockchain the ability to mint tokens.
Right.
It's wild, right? So flip to Coinos, right? Because you know, this gets back to my argument that the value here is we can compare and contrast. You jump back and forth and it highlights the costs and the benefits.
Yeah.
At the same time he's doing that, we're over in Steamland where we have this feeless blockchain where hard forking all these changes and improvements for, you know, 5 years. We're working with delegated proof of stake. And these hard forks are proving to be the bane of our existence.
Yeah.
You know, we're at first you're like, you know what, whatever. Hard forks are no big deal.
Yeah.
You know,
the witnesses are probably people you know and can work with. Like, you know, it's easy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Everybody's excited.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting rich.
Yeah.
The token's going to the moon. We can implement things natively in the blockchain and it isn't a big deal. So that's what the point, you know, because what we're talking about in the news right now is how Cardano, IOHK, whatever, added something to their blockchain. They hard forked it in. Great. Yay. Right. The thing people forget is that Steam was once worth almost $2 billion. It's not like we don't know what it's like to be iterating on and improving a highly valued blockchain. And it's not like just because your blockchain goes to that kind of value that it can't go down.
Right.
And in fact, yeah, what happens is that the higher the value goes, the harder it becomes to make changes.
Yeah.
And so all of these native implementations that you're hard forking into your blockchain, they wind up coming back to bite you. There are more things you need to change. There are more things you need to improve. And the experience that came out of that, the lesson that came out of those 20 plus hard forks for us, that trauma, like I said,
yeah,
was we want to implement as little natively as possible. We want to move as much as possible into smart contracts, have those smart contracts be in-band upgradable without a hard fork, and enable those smart contracts to be run without paying fees so that we can continue evolving and iterating and improving the platform. And so that's why we're taking the approach we are with Coinos, where instead of kind of going native implementations, then baking the tokens into the blockchain and then adding some kind of smart contracting layer, which is very difficult for me to understand and what they're doing.
Yeah.
We take the opposite kind of approach, where it's like, it's all going to be smart contracts. It's all going to be feeless. And now it's much easier to understand how the whole thing is going to work. We will implement things natively. It starts as simple as possible. We're going to try to keep it as simple as possible. But over time, that doesn't mean there will be no hard forks. What it means is that hard forks should become regular, say every 2 years, kind of like how it works with C++, you know?
Yeah.
And the purpose of them should be efficiency, performance. We have these features, we have these system contracts running, they're just like they are exactly smart contracts. What do we need to implement natively to make all of this run faster, more efficiently, more cheaply? What they're getting stuck in here is the exact same thing we got stuck in with Steam,
yeah,
where you go, this is obviously a good idea. You know, we don't need, you know,
we need smart media tokens, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. You remember those smart media tokens were native, like tokens natively implemented on the Steam blockchain, seem like an obvious no brainer. So we were, you know, we've made many of the same mistakes that they made. And fundamentally what it comes down to is they're picking specific kind of applications that they think obviously need to be implemented natively. They're baking those in. And I think obviously IOHK gets to push whatever upgrades they want to Cardano.
Yeah.
So either it stays with them in control, which isn't central, which isn't decentralized.
Right, right.
Or it becomes more decentralized and it's going to get harder and harder to continue making changes like this. And I think they're, and to me, what it means is that they're falling into the same trap of thinking that, you know what, we just got to get the broad strokes right at first. Then we leverage our power to get the rest of the 10% of the way there, and then we'll be done and it'll be perfect. And the fundamental difference with the approach that we're taking is that we're saying, we're not going to get it perfect, even close.
Yeah.
And we're not going to iterate a little bit towards perfection and then get to perfection. This seems like a kind of common flaw that maybe engineers are prone to, where they're like, I can get perfection at some point. We're like, it's all going to be this evolutionary process. We're going to make mistakes. We need to be able to patch the mistakes, fix the mistakes as rapidly as possible. And there's no perfection to be had here. Developers are going to love using NFTs one day, and they're going to love launching ICOs the next day. And then there's going to be things we've never even thought of. And the platform needs to adapt and evolve to that.
Yeah, no, I think that's such a good approach, because, like, you know, I work with a product called SAP, and they're a huge ERP system. They're absolutely massive, and they get stuck all the time, because, like, to change, you know, something for one client then affects all their customers and all their clients, and it's really hard. So I think by not only, like, you guys iterating, but also including the development of the community, like, that's huge. And so hopefully Coinos is looking pretty good in 10 years when these other blockchains are starting to get bogged down a little bit. So yeah, I think that's a really good approach.
Well, I think another part of it, and we touched on this in our last video, is the simplicity and how you design the system so that people can understand it and help improve it. And I think this highlights another thing that I see as a mistake in how they're approaching it, where when you implement things natively in the blockchain, you're confining the number of people who can understand it,
right,
and deal with it. And so everything we do is modular at every layer. So we have a microservice architecture, which in a way kind of has nothing to do with the blockchain itself. You can implement microservices however you want. It just happens to be a blockchain node. Then the blockchain itself is modular. It has these thunks that are basic implementations of features that then connect to the smart contract layer, and which enable us to, like, kind of enhance those feature sets and develop these more complicated features, right? But the point is that, like, it's all modular. If all you're interested in as a developer is the P2P microservice, you can just go and look at the microservice. If you as the developer are only interested in, like, the accounts system of the blockchain, like governance, for example,
right?
Like, governance on Coinos will be a smart contract. And so if you're really interested in that, if you want to improve in that, if you want to delve deep into that, you can literally go look at that smart contract.
Yeah. And that's all you need to understand.
And that's all you need to understand. And, like, this is why modular architectures, modular designs are just, like, increasingly important and universal is because, I mean, and it ties back into the whole idea around open source software development in the first place about it's like all about eyeballs. It's yeah. all about getting people's eyes on this stuff. And when you when you implement everything natively, the system gets more and more complex. The number of people who are capable of understanding and working in it is smaller and smaller. And then you build it in Haskell. And, you know, so
the language that everyone knows.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like, I don't think it's malicious intent. But, you know, I mean, I thought this about using C++. You know, like EOS is this complicated monolithic mess of C++. And when I was looking at that, Koinos is also, Koinos D is also in C++. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I'm not, but when you look at this like enormous mess of C++ and you realize that there's only going to be a tiny number of people who can even work in this, a part of me thought that there was a degree of intentionality to it, because what it means is that block one becomes so important and yeah. powerful.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's a very subtle way of accumulating power, because it's like, look, we have all these token holders. We don't do anything, but if you want to make it better, you need us. And I don't think it's intentional with Cardano as well. But maybe it's like a pleasant surprise right, that, you know, right. it's yep. going to make them more and more important. And so yes, Koinos D is in C++. But it's a very small piece of the code. It's, you know, there are tons of C++ developers. And since it's so small and the footprint's so small and the goal and the point is to keep it as small and simple as possible, that's what you can do to make it as accessible and comprehensible as possible.
Thank you very much for this, Andrew. This has been like a really good insight to a lot of different things. Cardano, I just like, you know, you look at it, but like when you don't talk about it, it kind of just washes over you. So thank you very much. And I'll see you again.
Yeah. Bye.